This is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Steve Potter in for Don Marsh today. Well, as you know, today is Valentine's Day, and you may be thinking about chocolate and roses. But Sandra Lagerschlag is more focused on the science behind love, and she's here now to explain that. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much.
Today is a pretty big deal for a lot of people. For most of us, you think?
Yes, so romantic love happens to virtually everyone at least once in a lifetime, and for a lot of people it happens many more times. So yeah, this is an important day for lots of people.
Virtually everyone?
Virtually everyone, yes. Not everyone experiences love.
But it's a small minority, you would say.
Yeah.
Well, you are an associate, or I should say, excuse me, an assistant professor in the Department of Psychological Sciences at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and you run the Neurocognition of Emotion and Motivation Lab. But, Sandra, the science behind love, this is Valentine's Day. I mean, how unromantic.
So people often say that. Sometimes people say, well, if we study love, aren't we taking away the magic? So maybe we should not be studying love. And I don't agree with that. So I think it's a really important topic to study because it happens to so many people. And when people fall in love, it really affects them to a great extent. So it has lots of positive effects, but it also has lots of negative effects. And I don't think that studying love takes away the magic, because if you, for example, think about depression, we study depression a lot. But even if we were to fully understand depression, people will still feel depressed, mm-hmm. and we may be able to help them feel better.
Well, should we all study love? I mean, shouldn't that just be left to scientists, or should the average person that goes through relationships make an effort to study it?
Well, so, I mean, virtually everyone knows what it feels like and what positive and negative effects it has. To really study something requires some scientific education. So, of course, people can think about what it means for them and how it makes them feel. But to actually do science requires a lot of education. Yeah.
The Neurocognition of Emotion and Motivation Lab. First, can you explain that a little to me?
Yes. So that is the name of my lab that I have at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. So in that lab, I work with students, undergraduate and graduate students, to study emotions and motivation. So we study emotions like fear, anger, happiness, things like that. And motivations that we study is mostly love. So I think that love is not an emotion, but it's a motivation. Hmm. And neurocognition means that we are interested in the brain. So a lot of what we feel and do and think originates from the brain. So it's important to study the brain. And what we are focused on is how emotions and motivation, so love, interact with cognition. And so cognition is, for example, attention or memory. And so I am looking at how emotions and love affect attention and memory, but also how the way we think can affect how in love we are or how emotional we are.
Well, does being in love affect everything that we think about?
A lot. So I have, for example, shown that people who are in love have extra attention for information that has to do with their beloved. So pictures of their beloved, but also words that have to do with their beloved. And also that they have better memory for that information. So, for example, if your beloved is a fan of Brad Pitt and you don't really care about Brad Pitt, but you walk on the street, you pass a movie poster that features Brad Pitt, now you're more likely to notice that poster and to actually remember having seen it today, because it has to do with your beloved.
But does it matter what kind of relationship you're in, whether it's a perfect, quote-unquote, relationship? Wonder if it's a love full of a lot of turmoil and negative things. Does that all matter?
Right. So for this attention and memory effect, probably it doesn't matter if you feel good when you see your beloved or if you feel bad when you see your beloved.
Huh. Yeah. Part of what you do is somehow, and I want you to explain it, is that you actually analyze brainwaves.
Right. Yes. So in my lab, I have the equipment to measure brainwaves, and we can see when the brain is doing something. So these brainwaves, event-related potentials, are what they called, have a millisecond precision. So we can see when the brain is doing something, and we can also figure out what cognitive process it is. So is it attention or memory or something like that?
You said a couple of minutes ago that love is not an emotion but a motivator.
Right. So actually a lot of people may think that love is an emotion, but if you think about it, love elicits all sorts of emotions depending on the situation. So if you are in love and the other person loves you back, now it makes you very happy. But if you are in love and the other person doesn't love you back or maybe just broke up with you, then it makes you very sad. So that tells me love itself cannot be an emotion. And I and other researchers have called it a motivation.
So as part of your research involved figuring out how to have a good love relationship, a lasting one, is that part of the equation?
So I don't study relationships so much. I study more the individual love feeling that someone has. Yeah.
But they have to vary a lot from person to person, don't they? Or do you see more commonality?
Do you mean love feelings or relationships?
Yeah, between love feelings, yeah.
So that's very interesting. People often feel when they are in love that it's a very special feeling and this person is really special. But I think across the board, people feel the same when they are in love. And they all feel that to them it's very special.
It's so complicated, isn't it?
Right.
In our own minds. You know, society tells you, I think we grow up believing – I mean, that's the model. We're supposed to fall in love. We're supposed to find that perfect person and have this storybook romance. But that's not reality. I mean, I don't know what the percentage of people that have a perfect relationship, but it's not really reality for a lot of people.
Right, right. Yeah, so it's interesting, especially in the Western world, how much importance we give to love. And we expect to, for example, marry someone that we fell in love with first. Whereas in other parts of the world, it's maybe there's less of an emphasis on love for marriage. And even like centuries ago, in the past, also people in the Western world got married for business reasons, really.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, what about those arranged marriages? It seems so – just the concept here seems so strange, but it's so accepted over there. Does that seem to work?
So I have not done any research on arranged marriages, but they can certainly be happy. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you say a lot of love happens outside of relationships. I would think a lot of people might take issue with that.
Right, right. So that's one thing that I often hear in response to my research. So I study individual love feelings. So I study how does someone feel or how does it affect their cognition. And then a lot of people are asking me, well, you're not even considering romantic relationships. How can you leave that out of the equation? And I think I can leave that out of the equation because, like you just said, a lot of love happens outside of relationships. People can be in love with someone they are not in a relationship with, not yet, or maybe not anymore. People even fall in love with people that they have never really talked to. So people report love at first sight, or people report crushes on celebrities.
Well, I want to ask you about love at first sight because that sort of happened to me before. I think most people – when you maybe not just at first sight, but when you meet somebody and all of a sudden, you meet most people, but it's not very often you meet somebody that you click with immediately and you feel like you've known them forever and you haven't. That's sort of a rare feeling. So is that love or are we misinterpreting that?
Well, so people have different definitions of love. So to me, love is a very broad definition. So I would say love at first sight would count as love, but it's different than this very deep like attachment.
Doesn't matter how long it lasts. Wonder if I meet someone, I 3 days later I'm over it. Is that the same thing that if it lasts for 10 years?
Yeah, I would call it both love. There's just many different forms.
Hmm. Yeah. Does everyone need love?
Oh, good question. So we are a very social species. So I think we all need love in one form or another. It doesn't necessarily need to be romantic love, but just love from parents, friends, children,
oh, that's a good
something
point.
Like that.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
I think back when you were beginning your higher education, about 20 years ago or something, you were in a relationship and you got dumped.
Right.
And then I think it was just a few months later that you fell in love again. Is that where all this sort of started for you? Where you started to focus on this or think about it?
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, first I was very heartbroken. Then a few months later, I was head over heels. And then I started my psychology degree. And then I was really interested in figuring out, well, what are these feelings and why do I feel the way I feel and what's happening in my brain? And so that's how I started to try and read about the science of love. And then I also found that there was not a whole lot of research on romantic love. And then I was like, okay, then I'll do the work.
So studying love didn't ruin it for you?
Not at all, no.
You can still approach it in an innocent sort of way?
Right. I got married a little less than 2 years ago, so
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's worked out so far. But, to talk about that again, about, when you got dumped, fell in love again, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Those are two experiences. They're related in a way, but they're also so opposite.
Right. Yes, definitely. And so I was thinking a lot about, because I was reading about that, how some people think of love as an addiction, you know, and people that are infatuated are very obsessed with their beloved. Even in one of my studies, people reported to think about their beloved on average for 65% of their waking hours, which is a very long time.
Is that healthy? As a psychologist, would you say that's healthy?
Right. So, well, now I'm actually studying how does that harm other stuff that they should be doing. So does it distract them from doing their school or their work? Because, yes, that's a lot of time and effort and energy that they're not spending on things that maybe they should be spending it on.
Well, you know, I know everybody's different. And some people are in long relationships forever. Others might be single for a year or two. But I also know people that are never single,
right,
even if they've had 10 relationships. And I don't mean this criticism or anything. I just like to understand it. They go from one relationship to another. What does that say anything about?
Well, so I haven't actually studied that. There's definitely big differences between people and how easily people fall in love, how much people like to be in love, and yeah, so how if they're always in a relationship or if there are long times in between.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation if they have a comment about love. If they want to share a personal experience, they can, or if just a general question. What kind of things do people often want to know from you, ask you, when it comes to love?
Well, so one thing that is very interesting, so in my studies, people that are infatuated, they will come in and we put the head cap on, we measure their brain waves, and then when we're done with the study, they say, so, am I really in love?
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I hope some people will join us and share some thoughts or give us some insight and just see what they have to say. Our number is 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at STL on air.
There's nothing you can do that can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to the discussion of the science of love on this Valentine's Day. Sandra Lagerschlag is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychological Sciences at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, and she runs the Neurocognition of Emotion and Motivation Lab at the university. And we're talking about love, and of course we have invited you to join us at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. If you have a question about love or an observation or a disagreement, because, Sandra, I want to say that over the course of your research, you have received some pushback from people. Not everyone agrees with what you have to say, and I'm sure you're all right with that.
Right. Of course, that's part of science, right? Some healthy discussion and disagreement.
What's the thing that people are most upset with you about when they are?
Well, I think we already talked about it a little bit earlier, that some people are afraid that studying love takes away the magic, or the fact that I don't really consider relationships, but I'm studying love feelings, upsets some people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you could be happy in love and never have a serious relationship?
What do you mean by happy in love?
Well, we're talking about love and making you happy as opposed to like a serious relationship that lasts forever.
Right. Well, so oftentimes when people are in love, they would actually like to be in a relationship with that person. Not always, but I think that's usually people's goals. So usually people, I think, are not very happy if the other person doesn't love them back.
That would make sense. Let's go to the phone. Sam's calling from St. Louis with a question. Hi, Sam. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Go ahead.
So you said that love is more of a motivation than it is an emotion. But it doesn't really seem like there's a consistent way to satisfy love. You know, like we said earlier, it could be a day or 10 years. And I was just wondering if you found a consistent way to satisfy love or any other sort of answer to that.
So what do you mean by satisfy love?
So, you know, like with hunger, you eat some food and then it goes away, or tiredness, you go to sleep.
I see.
Some way to dismiss the motivation.
Yep. I see what you're saying. So I think for a lot of people, actually being with their beloved, hanging out, physical contact, just talking with them, maybe even being in a relationship, I think that would satisfy love, although it doesn't make it go away like eating makes hunger go away. So I see what you're saying.
Hunger's a little easier to satisfy.
Right.
We have a story of lost love, separation, and renewal from Alton, Illinois. Hi, Greg. What's your story?
Hi there. My name is Greg LeClaire. I married my I dated my wife in high school, and we lost contact when I went in the Navy. She was a junior, I was a senior, and she said, I asked her to marry me in the driveway, and she says, no, I still have my senior year to go. We lost contact for 24 years. We've been married 8 years. She is the queen of Highland, Illinois, and it's a 50-year reign, by the way, so it's kind of strange, but yep, we are the love of our lives. It's just amazing.
Do you have any advice for the rest of us, Greg?
Don't give up on lost loves. I'm telling you. Here's the bad thing: is this is my fifth marriage, but I was always searching for Lauren, and she is the best thing that ever came into my life.
Sandra, anything pop to mind that you're curious to ask Greg about?
So I think it's very romantic if you say don't give up on lost loves, and I think it turned out great for you, right?
It's been amazing. Amazing. I mean, happy Valentine's Day to my wife.
So, Greg, I have to ask you before you go, what do you got planned?
Well, I work straight midnight, and I just worked a 12-hour shift, so hopefully, and she works days and goes to college, so hopefully I'm awake when she can get home, and we'll have a dinner, and then I go to work. So.
Or maybe you'll do something tomorrow.
Right.
Thanks,
yeah,
Greg.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. You know, that brings to mind, Sandra, I'm curious, some people work really hard at being romantic, and I know other people that – I talked to somebody yesterday that they don't even really celebrate Valentine's Day. And then I know other people that if you don't get the flowers and make the dinner reservations, does any of that matter?
Well, so I think, again, people vary in how romantic they are or how much they like romance. I mean, I think anything is fine as long as if you're in a relationship, if the both of you agree on how romantic you want to be or how you want to spend Valentine's Day.
And at the end of the day, when you lie down, the lights go out, you got to be happy.
Right. Yep.
Is that sort of the bottom line?
Being happy is not easy, but yes.
Right. Let's go to Collinsville. We have a call from Warren regarding how love can fade away. Warren, go ahead, please.
Hi. I was just listening, and I was thinking about some girlfriends I've had in the past, and I'm the type of guy who, if I've ever loved you, then I'll always love you, and that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm in love, but I just think about girlfriends I don't see anymore and how I still really care about them and hope they're doing well. And I was wondering do you think that's rare or is that common?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure what the answer is. Again, there's a lot of differences between people. Some people, when they break up, they are very resentful towards their ex and wish them the worst. And then there's people that are more neutral, and then there's people like you that even after breakups still wish their ex the best.
Warren, has it always been a reciprocal on your end, even though you have these good feelings? Does your ex-partner always like you back too, or is it just one-sided?
I don't really know. I've never really had a breakup that was so bad that I would resent the other person.
Wow.
But that's not to say it wouldn't be bad for other people. I just think that I don't take that kind of thing so seriously.
Well, you seem to have a healthy attitude, Warren, so best of luck, and I hope you have a romantic day today.
Thank you.
You know, that's always puzzled me a little bit, Sandra. It's when someone can go from loving someone so much to hating them so much, and that happens.
Yes, it sure does. I think when partners hurt each other's feelings, it can easily turn into hate rather than love.
Let's go to St. Louis and Louis. Louis, you're on the air with Sandra Lagerschlag on St. Louis on the Air. Go ahead.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. I did some ethnographic research in Greece, and a number of people that I interviewed were had arranged marriages. And so when I talked to the women, they would all say, not for love. I never married for love. But, you know, they'd say, well, now, sure. Is there any cognitive change that you that people have done research on over time to see if there's anything?
So what are you asking, like, how people can sort of fall in love within an arranged marriage?
Well, I'm talking more on the neurological level.
Mm.
Over right. time. I mean, yeah, is there sort of something sustainable that you can say, hey, look, maybe there is something happening?
Right. So I'm not sure if people have actually done that sort of research on arranged marriages, but it is well known that in sort of our Western marriages that are based on love, love feelings tend to decline over time, unfortunately, whereas in arranged marriages, love feelings actually increase over time. And especially if both partners are willing to make it work, it can become a very happy marriage.
Sandra, I think you've said that love has three different feelings, lust,
mm-hmm.
attraction, attachment.
Right, right. So this is a model by Helen Fisher that I use in my work. She says that humans have sort of three different types of love. So the first one is lust or sexual desire. The second one is infatuation or attraction or passionate love, which is this early stage when people are nervous and euphoric and butterflies. And then the last one is attachment or companionate love, which is this long-term pair bonding.
And how are those three things, lust, attraction, attachment, related? Do they always come in that order, or can they be in different orders? Do they overlap?
They can definitely be in different orders. You can feel two or more of those for the same person at the same time. So you can be attached to someone and also feel sexual desire for them. But you can also be attached to one person and then feel sexual desire for someone else.
But you always have all three?
They don't necessarily occur all three at the same time, no.
No, but all three eventually?
Never
just two?
Not necessarily, no.
I guess there are no absolutes in this, right?
No.
This is not an absolute science?
Well, we're only starting to study it, so there's a lot we don't know yet.
All right, let's go to Augustine, who has a question about understanding love yourself. Go ahead, Augustine. You're on the air.
Hi, Augustine, longtime listener. Love the program. I just wanted to say that, you know, I've been through a breakup, like you guys have said, and it was fairly hard for me at the beginning, but, you know, I've learned to, you know, deal with, you know, how to adjust from a long-term relationship into being single. As I began to really understand myself, I realized that, you know, love it really liberates itself from the inside. So, you know, I know there's a lot of questions about how love can affect us or how it comes to be, but without that recognition, I feel like, you know, you can't really learn to love.
Right. I think you're bringing up an important point, that is that again, it's not love is not necessarily part of a relationship or not necessarily the result of how you interact with another person, but it also has a lot to do with you. What do you feel? What do you want? So that's an important point.
Sandra, you know what just occurred to me, which
what?
I thought was a little strange? Every call we've had so far about love has been from a man.
That's interesting, yes.
Does that mean anything to you?
Well, I'm actually surprised about it.
Why?
Because normally when I study love, I usually try to have equal numbers of male and female participants in my studies. And usually we have trouble finding enough men that want to participate.
Hmm.
And I always interpret that in the way that I think, well, men are maybe not that open about love or just not that interested in dealing their sharing their experiences with researchers. It's surprising to me that it's mostly men that are calling.
Well, we do have a lady finally on the line.
Great.
Let's see what she has to add. Say hi to Amy from University City. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Yeah. I go to UMSL, and I just saw Dr. Sandra. I can't pronounce your last name. I'm sorry.
That's
but
fine.
I saw online, I was reading about your research and how people – They don't react well to when they hear, like, oh, you can study love, and we have these concrete details of things. And I'm wondering, the people who don't agree with your research, if they view love as this magical thing that comes upon them, like they have no control over whether they love someone or not, and it's not up to them whether they put effort into the relationship, rather than, like, you know, people who've been married for 50 or 60 years, and it's every day deciding to work at loving their partner.
Yeah, that's a very great suggestion. That may very well be.
Let's go to Chicago for one more question. This is Rupert. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, so two-part question, if that's okay.
Just make it quick. We're sort of running out of time.
Yeah, you got it. So what are the various brain activities that are associated with the different phases of love? Can you speak to that?
Well, that's a very... That's a good question, and a lot we don't know yet. So there's not one love brain region. Love is very complex, and it involves a lot of different brain regions.
Is there hope for everyone when it comes to love?
Sure.
Now, wait a minute. You didn't seem too convincing. Is there anything that surprised you from all your research?
No, I just really like the topic.
Okay, how about this? What would you have to say to a person who is single on this Valentine's Day and who is unhappy about it? Do you have any advice at all?
Well, there's lots of ways in which you can try to find someone who you could fall in love with.
You're not talking social media, are you?
Internet dating.
What do you think
like
about
that? I think that's a great idea for people, yeah.
You don't see anything healthy about it? You think it works just fine?
If you don't get obsessed by it, yeah.
Uh-huh. what's ahead for you as far as your research? Are you going to write a book?
Or a lot. Well, people have been asking me that. I don't have any plans for a book, but there's so much more I need to study and that we still don't know that I have lots of work to do.
Well, we've been talking with Sandra Lagerschlag. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychological Sciences at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, and she runs their Neurocognition of Emotion and Motivation Lab there. And we want to thank you so much for being here on this Valentine's Day, and I guess we wish the best to everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Eat some chocolate, right?
Definitely.
Love was made for me and you. Love, I was made for me.